Running a podcast takes a lot of time and money, so I want to take a moment to say thank you with all my heart to the following homies who have donated so generously to help keep this show free to air for everyone to enjoy. So thank you to Karen Allen, Shannon Hilkemeyer, Erica Zapp, Anna Puig, Arlene Galt, and Linda Royal, as well as a listener whose name starts with C that doesn't want to be named. So thank you so much to all of you. If you have found value from this podcast at all, please consider donating at www.eugeniekruger.com and click the donate button at the top. Thanks so much. Today, we have third-time return guest, Dr. Paul Terrio. So be sure to check out episodes 122 and 190 to learn more about him. Paul was recently involved in the trituration of Welwitschia mirabilis, which is an absolutely fascinating plant. I do hope you will all support Paul's work by purchasing his book on Welwitschia, as well as his several other books at www.lulu.com. And if you'd like to learn more about Paul, you can visit www.drpaulterriault.com. That's T-H-E-R-I-A-U-L-T. I also hope to be stocking Paul's remedies soon so he can finally receive some royalties from the remedies that he has created. So do keep an eye on my website for this. Towards the end of the episode, we have a discussion about transgender. This can certainly be a loaded topic, just as much as vaccination, I would say, which is another pretty loaded topic these days. We actually had no intention of venturing into this topic, but it became a natural flow on from the discussion which we were having, which is actually a beautiful part of longer length podcasting episodes, because things do tend to kind of naturally evolve from one topic to the next. So I do feel it was an important discussion to be had, but yeah, it was completely impromptu. We had no intention. But at the end of the day, really what I hope you get out of this is that as homeopaths, it really is just our goal to support anybody, no matter their beliefs or their gender or anything else, to support them on a mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual level and ensure their utmost well-being and help them live the best life they possibly can, whatever that might look like. So I hope you enjoy the episode and do feel free to join us on our Facebook group called Homeopathy Hangout Podcast. Enjoy the episode.
Welcome to the Homeopathy Hangout, where we discuss all things homeopathy from around the world. And now my mum and your host, Eugenie Kruger.
Hello, homies, and welcome back to the Homeopathy Hangout Podcast. Today we have, as a third time guest on the podcast, Dr. Paul Terrio. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me, Eugenie.
It's lovely to have you. We've had several listener requests to have you on the podcast. You've always got multiple projects in the pipeline, but you've recently done a trituration of Welwitschia mirabilis. So we're very excited to hear all about that. And hopefully at the end, we can have a chat about some of the books that you've got in the pipeline and the other projects that you've got going as well. But you've actually got a PowerPoint presentation for us here. So for anybody who is listening on the audio, if you want to go check out on YouTube or Rumble the presentation afterwards, you can. You'll also have to listen back on Paul's previous two episodes to hear a little bit more about him. But maybe you could just quickly give us a little rundown. Just quickly tell our listeners who you are, where you're based, what you do before we hop into the presentation.
So I am Paul. I'm a naturopathic doctor and I practice in Calgary, Alberta. I do a little bit of everything. I never really went into that whole specialization thing that we're apparently supposed to do these days, because I always really enjoyed being a general practitioner and like, I have no idea what's going to come in the door. So, which is really quite an enjoyable experience. So I remember like a while ago when I was just treating one thing for a little while, like, and it was just like the most boring thing in the world. So I'm really happy to be in my general practice right now.
Amazing. Well, the floor is yours. Take us on the journey. Right.
So just a reminder for everyone, tritration has been a thing in homeopathy for the last maybe 30-ish years. Witold Erler began using it in the 1990s, and then Kim Kalina and myself started to systematize it a little bit in just kind of in the last decade. So basically, in a very brief summary, the trituration movement from 1 to 4 hours of trituration, so 1 to 4 hours of grinding and scraping with a mortar and pestle, you get a remedy that makes that kind of goes to the individual level. 5 to 8 hours, you get one that's a bit more collective, focusing on like your family, your culture, your country, your species, that kind of thing. 9 to 12, you start to get a remedy that has a resonance to the issues of the entire planet. 13 to 16, the solar system. 17 to 20, the galaxy. 21 to 24, roughly the universe as we define it in English. 25 to 28, you'd get something that's a bit more multiversal. 29 to 32, you'd get this higher level above multiversal that's eternal, but still corruptible. It's still got problems. And then 33 to 36, you get levels that are eternal and incorruptible. And Kim kind of, this kind of came as a download to Kim, but I have verified it. So it is, this is approximately correct. And you, if you actually do, you go through these things. So Welwitschia is a plant from the Natales. So the Natales are these kind of gymnosperm plants. So they've got seeds, but no flowers, which is what a gymnosperm is. It is the sole member of the Welwitschiales order and genus and species. So it is the only one of its kind. The Natales are not a big thing. They've also got ephedra and they've got netum in there as well. So some netum species where there's quite a few. And ephedra, there's a few species, but Welwitschia is the only one. It lives
ephedra,
in
the... Ephedra as in what ephedrine is made from?
Yes.
Oh, same interesting. Thing.
So they're all kind of related to each other. It lives in the Namibian desert in Southwest Africa. And it is immortal. Almost. These things basically have two big leaves, and the leaves kind of just keep growing forever, and they kind of just get bigger and bigger and bigger, and they kind of fragment so they look like smaller leaves, but there's only two. And then the ends kind of die, but the leaf never dies. It just keeps growing and growing and growing. So in one of the African languages, they call it the plant that can never die. It has got these little things here, and I really like them. So it's got these little cone things here, and the cones and some of the, they've got these little like little protoflowers on them that are actually insect pollinated. So you can see a little bit of the bridging of between the flowering plants and the non-flowering plants, because they've got these kind of like protoflowers. And botanists will never call them flowers because botanists have very precise terminology for everything. But there you see this and you're like, oh, it's kind of like a flower. It's kind of, and it's got nectar. It's got like proto nectar, and it's got like, oh, it's almost a flowering plant. So me and Michal started triturating the seeds of this plant together, and we started in 2022, and we did it up to C8, and I just felt like it wasn't done. So after a particular alignment from November 8th to 9th of last year in 2023, I resumed it, and it exceeded all of my expectations. It summarized a lot of my earlier work that I'd been planning on releasing very gradually. So we're going to get into that. So as most of the people on listening here are like familiar with homeopathy and are homeopaths. So the basic picture of Welwitschia is pretty easy to understand. It's living death. You can have advanced pathologies like cancer or like ALS or like anything else with very little pain or suffering. Quite often there's a huge immune and infectious component to these. These are people who've got like pneumonia with no signs. They've got like kidney infections with no signs. They've got mold colonization and everything. And they're really sick, but they're like, oh, their body's not mounting a response to it. They're usually actually also pretty lucid and they know what's going on with them, but they're often not that bugged by it. This is not an arsenicum patient where they've got an infection and they know it and like, oh my God, like it is the worst thing in the world. It's going to destroy everything.
I'm already thinking of a client of mine with pituitary tumors and liver tumors, but she's traveling the world, living her best life, and she just doesn't care about any of that. But
yeah, that may very well be that.
Interesting.
So there's a word in this presentation called bardo. We'll explain that. But bardo is basically a physiological process of death. Death isn't what happens when just everything happens, when, you know, your physiology just ceases after a long struggle. Bardo, the way I term it, and some of the Germans use the term excarnation. It's the same thing. It is a physiological process where your vitality shuts down and the self, the real you, exits. So it is initiated in these people by an influx of higher energies. So it's like people who would have a spiritual experience and then they'd start dying instead of, you know, dying and then having the spiritual, like it happens the other way around for them. They have a high spiritual experience and they'd start dying. Their vitality is so exhausted that they can't actually die. So they just sit around and kind of like in this not very suffery state, just slowly decomposing and not able to move on. So it's a very interesting remedy. So this is the basic picture. This is kind of like that 1-4 picture that we came up with. I'm going to give you guys some information. I'm just going to summarize the information. So I did actually publish this remedy into a book and it's available now. It's on lulu.com. I'll give you the link, Eugenie, so you can put it in the show description. But it is, so I will summarize the information I got. about everything else, because it is like, wow. So I'm kind of summarizing all the stuff I got from the like 1 to 36 titrations, because going through them one at a time, we'd be here for a day. I could probably teach a whole course on this entire remedy. But our multiverse, in this viewpoint of the Welwitschia, which you can think is delusion or you can think is reflective of reality somewhat, was formed from the degree of like a primordial cataclysm. There was like some higher eternal universe, that C36 universe. There's a big cataclysm, kaboom, taboom as my nephew calls it. And then debris happened. And then there was this kind of cosmic net that started keeping everything separate from that higher eternal reality. And we know about this eternal reality. You know, people will call it heaven, or they'll call it a Buddha field, or they'll call it, you know, a bunch of other things. There's a bunch of names for it, or a higher dimension, or everything. We all kind of know about it. So it set up this thing, and I just call it the cosmic web. And some of my earlier work, I called it the great death miasm. So kind of Sora in the way that Kent was talking about it. It's the same thing. So it was set up to contain it. And there's a subsidies of energies from eternal creation that was created, which uses kind of like a field to subsidize life in our new multiverse that got created by accident. So within this, there were a series of transpersonal fields that arose. This is a big theme with the fungus remedies. So fungus remedies have this inherent connection to these, I call them transpersonal fields, that span time and space and kind of hold universes together. But all of the ones in our universe are finite. They have limits to them. They only exist for so long. Universes have a beginning and then they have an ending, and that's it. So there were links between Forge, and there's this really complicated system that I get into in my book, and I really wish I had the time and anything to do this. But there was, in essence, an idea to kind of evacuate things from the finite universe back to the eternal one, back to the original one. And humans were the peak of this effort. We were designed to be able to go from like stuck here in finite reality, different, not able to go back, and to being able to make that journey back to eternal reality within the span of a single lifetime. That was what humans were for. If anything, this actually does resemble Jain cosmology quite a bit. So if this is actually just a thing from Wikipedia on Jain cosmology, it's really, our dominion is right there. There's a bunch of universes that are kind of above us that are a little bit more eternal. And then there is Siddhashila, the abode of liberated beings, which I would call the eternal universe. And then below us, there's actually a lot of universes that are quite a bit less pleasant. So this is I want everyone to acknowledge how great of an artist I am. Look at that. That's great. This is our cosmos. And then the spiky bit is our multiverse. And those little dots in our little mini universes that we can see and perceive.
You sure it wasn't your nephew that did that?
Oh, my nephew cannot hope to be as good of an artist as I am. That was amazing, Eugenie, whatever.
Luckily, so, we know you've got lots of other talents.
I know. So humans are designed to go from that finite state to eternal state in one single lifetime, not like 400 lifetimes, like they say in some of the Buddhist and some of the Hindu works, like, oh, you got to study these things for 400 lifetimes. I'm like, oh my God, who's got that kind of time? One lifetime, as easy as we hit puberty or menopause or anything else like that, and just as automatically. We do this, we go through a series of shifts in our lives called which I term the maturations. And I got that term from one of my teachers, Gerard Guignol, who passed away in 2009, but he was super awesome. And this corresponds also to us moving through the kind of developmental phases we've identified in homeopathy. So Jan Scholten's got them, those series of the periodic table. Michal Yakir has them in her plant table, and I've got them in my animals table. So maturations and those kind of layers, series, columns, etc., they're the same thing. They're just divided up a little bit differently. And there are several of them past menopause and andropause and the periodic table as well that we just don't have as much to do with on current humans, but they are there. So if anyone needs a reminder of the periodic table, that's it. Oh, I put in two. This is my animals table. And this is Michal's plant table, her newer version of it, which includes the non-flowering plants. So human life cycle, usually we kind of go through layers 1 to 3 between puberty and adolescence. So layer 1, do I exist or not? Layer 2, boundaries between me and the outside world. Layer 3, well, I'm separate from the outside world. Who am I? Then we go through kind of second maturation, which is around when our brains mature, when we're 21 to 25. I don't know if you remember that. I do remember that quite a bit. It's like, oh my God, I can think now. I can think so much more clearly and I'm making better decisions. It was quite a big shock.
It took me longer than that to make good decisions.
Well, you know, I still make poor decisions in many areas. Then we go through early adulthood and so forth. Ideally, by the time we hit menopause or andropause, we hit that eighth layer, which is fungi, actinides. There's not really any plant representatives. And then we are in this liberated state that we are that saint, we are that sage, we are that siddha, we are that elder, we are whatever our local tradition calls it. It's kind of that same thing. So some of the more interesting things that I've kind of come up with is that each layer that we move through, so each one of those stages in human development, we should open up a new chakra system into the human vital force. Most of this does not happen because of miasms. There's roughly one chakra system per layer and roughly two per maturation. And I think there's actually 16 chakra systems in total. So systems, not individual chakras, that like seven chakra system. And you and Eileen have been doing such a good job with it. I've been following all of your little podcasts and everything. But it's like there's a separate system for each layer of the vitality, and it brings in a separate energy into the vital force, and it all mixes it up within our esoteric work. They call it the etheric body. It really governs the physical. So ideally, we have a separate chakra system for each that we'll have, like, by the time we're finished this, 16 to 8 or 8 to 16 of them, and not just the 1-7 chakra system that we have, which is kind of like the first one that is vaguely active in most people.
I'm just like sitting here because I've just got my head around the 7 chakras. Now you want to tell me there's systems as well. Where do you find more about that? Have you got a resource?
No, this is my work.
Excellent.
Iesha Ashiana Reyes works with about 4 of them, but I think there's 16.
Mm.
So here's just, if you'll see on the left, my little diagram there. So they're all integrated into things I call chakra complexes. So a chakra complex, and there's about 5 of those. The Tibetans actually knew about them. So the Tibetans, if you see some of the Tibetan medical diagrams, and they're like, there's five chakras in our system, they're talking about chakra complexes. And so they'll have like active chakras that are bringing in energies to that you've gone through your maturations for and everything. And there are inactive energy ones that are just, they just kind of look like they're not bringing anything in there, and they integrate them in. And there are 5. There's one at the head, the throat, the kind of heart thymus center, somewhere in the abdomen, and then kind of the pelvis area. So you can see right there on the right, that's kind of where they all are. Another thing that is often not discussed often is the psychic organ. So our vitalities will make this little field that spans throughout space and time. And as we mature and as we get better, the field becomes more and more autonomous. It doesn't depend on the physical body to sustain it anymore. So if you get to this stage, you are invested across space and time, like everything that was, everything that could be, everything that might have been if you made a different choice, like those all exist out there somewhere. And you're literally there, physically present for everything. And it's just about a matter of like tuning in and picking it out and everything. So that ideally, if we were healthy, would be fully mature at menopause or andropause. So another thing that should be occurring during this maturation process, and it would be really nice if, like, wow, what a nice vision you have of humanity, Paul. This does not happen. I do not think this has happened in very many people, because we've got all of this energetic crap that seems to be fairly universal. So we don't have enough time to get into like every little nitpicky detail. It is in my book, but there's 2 that are very important. There is a transformation of the physical body that occurs, and I've adopted there's 2 processes that occur during this, transformation and transfiguration, which I've adopted from Iesha Ashiana. She's kind of like a spiritual teacher who lives in Florida. I've followed her for a long time. She's just pretty on the dot sometimes with these things. So transformation is when we open up the energy channels, not only within our own like kind of energy bodies, but also on an atomic level. There are these energy flows that are blocked that, if they were open, would really change the physical properties of matter. So that is what we are supposed to be doing to our bodies. And transfiguration is another one. Basically, the processes of human maturation, we open up these chakras, they bring in a new energy. Each one of these energies is a different portion of that eternal reality. We merge them all together and add in the physical, in our physical bodies and our vitalities, and we end up recreating that eternal creation, infinite creation in our own vital force. We recreated ourselves. It's a work in progress. Each time we open a new chakra system, and again, there's 16. Each time we open a new chakra system and bring in all that energy, we get a little bit closer to it, and our physical bodies transform a little bit. So it kind of, and most people will take it up in a healthy human state, will kind of go up to menopause and or andropause, and then they'll go through bardo. They will kind of go and, you know, do some stuff that we'll talk about in a minute. But some people choose to do additional maturations and fully go through with the process. And there is, we'll talk about that too. So that word was chosen very deliberately. I do think some people have managed to do this before. This is the Transfiguration by Raphael. This is not just a thing that happened, you know, maybe thousands of years ago, depending on your religious beliefs. There is a tradition in Tibet of called Rainbow Body, in which certain adepts that practice one particular meditative art, Dzogchen, this will happen to them after they die. The custom Tibet in Tibet is for people to do Tadong. So they'll basically sit you in a meditative posture and just leave you to meditate while you're dying for like a couple weeks until you're starting to decompose. That doesn't always happen. Quite often they will leave people to decompose, but their bodies will disappear and they will appear, rainbows will appear in the skies, and you know, all sorts of interesting things will happen. And then quite often these adepts will appear in visions to their disciples, sometimes in very tangible ways. Does it sound familiar? I think it's actually the same thing that was occurring in the Transfiguration of Jesus and this rainbow body phenomenon. My contention, and what the remedy does point the way to, is that all of this, this transfiguration process, should be as automatic as menopause is or as puberty is. This should be something that occurs to everybody. That is my contention of that. That is what the remedy has suggested to me, and that's why I needed to write this book and have this interview and everything. I think the remedy that, and there's a very specific preparation of Wolwichia that I use now, will kind of bring people a lot closer to this process. I don't think it's like giving someone a pill and then poof, wow, they transfigured. It doesn't work like that. But I do think that there's a gradual physiological process that can be reinitialized slowly. And over a period of several generations, we probably can get humanity to do this regularly. So that process that the Tibetans do, Dzogchen, in the local Tibetan population does seem to have reached a critical mass. It happens every year or two. So the most recent case I was able to find, and there's probably many more, but you know, the recent documented case was in 2017. And you do get not only people that practice the particular meditative tradition, you also get like random nomadic Tibetans occasionally manifesting it. Like it seems to have reached a critical mass in Tibet where this happens quite a bit. I think we could probably do this for the entire human population and probably maybe get this happening at a widespread just through using this remedy quite widely in a populace if we were doing it in where we do population dosing model.
That's a big claim, hey?
That is a big, I will say that speculative claim. I admit this is a speculative claim, but I think, you know, I think it's worthwhile.
Yeah.
There's two possibilities. Humans could do that. They can just do that kind of process after menopause or andropause, or they can continue on to do the further maturations. And if you're doing that, you will actually transform part of that kind of cosmic structure that's holding the entire finite multiverse in place. And just because of the nature of that psychic organ, span reaches throughout time and space, you'll engage with the web to that point. And if you complete this process, you'll actually dissolve it. So like it never was. We get enough people to do this. And then I actually think it will be like that original primeval cataclysm never happened. This is my evil little plan. Someone once told me, it's like, if you're not part of a conspiracy, you should probably start one. And this is my conspiracy. So
this makes life more interesting, if nothing else.
Yes, it does. This doesn't happen because of miasms. The way I see miasms, they're like these little crystally things on the shell of your etheric body, and they prevent all of this stuff from occurring. They prevent maturation, they prevent full incarnation, they prevent activation of chakras, transformation, transfiguration, and the human purpose. The most interesting thing that I kind of learned from this is that, so particularly, again, I've been listening to Eileen, the emotional body, she calls it the astral body, yeah. The mental body and the causal body, all those layers, they shouldn't be there. they're being prevented from incarnating into the vital force, the etheric body, the kind of one that immediately is like about an inch or two above your skin and permeates the physical body. They should be like smushed in there. They should be incarnate. The parts that we can see outside are the parts that are being blocked from incarnating by those miasms.
Wow.
So
that's the first time I've heard that.
Yeah, they should be in there. So they and they're still kind of half processing the stuff outside of your body.
Oh,
so it should be going on inside. So, and it would be if you were healthy.
Wow.
So,
well, that kind of makes sense. Like if the astral body can kind of leave, if it's not feeling comfortable and there's too much pain and emotion, it kind of makes sense that those other layers can kind of do the same if they...
They shouldn't be outside to begin with. They should be right integrated into your body.
Oh my gosh. That's a really interesting idea.
If Eileen listens to this, I would love to hear her opinion.
Oh, you know she will. I'm sure she'll.
I would love to hear her opinion on my heresy. anyway, so miasms also connect us to a thing. Some people call it, like Aisha calls it the net, and Steiner calls it the eighth sphere. It is this artificial energy field that encompasses the planet, and it is a level of control over our biologies, our ecosystems, our societies, and it keeps us locked into a system of control that is past even what we see socially. Most of us, and I'm going to guess a large percentage of your readers, whether we're conscious of it or not, are feeling this thing. It's just that constant, ever-present reality that we're just butting up against. Just like you just feel it permeating the world around you. And it's really like jangly and angry this last decade. It's actually been getting worse. It's an additional level of control that I think is very specific to Earth on top of that cosmic web we talked about earlier. And it is really keeping us locked here, locked in this level of social development, locked on this planet, and locked into our current biologies. Like, I think without it, we would be a lot healthier and a lot like more magical and everything. I think our psychic powers would be much more present and easily activated. So this is from one of my earlier books. This is from Resurrection of the Vital Force. And they kind of, it's a diagram of nets. So nets will also connect us to kind of other realities that aren't so pleasant, and they will channel those energies onto the into the planet. It's very, like, some of those spots are just super awkward. I won't mention them, but on a planet I don't live on, so Calgary's not one, if anyone wants to know, but there's a couple of them, and you can usually kind of get them if you feel like there's a lot of people figuring this out on the internet and everything. So in a sense, on Earth we really are in a prison, not only just a physical prison, not only a prison because we can't get off the planet in appreciable numbers. We are stuck here, energetically bound in on this planet, in this multiverse, betrayed by our miasms, bound to a course which is being directed, I think, not by like actual physical people, but like some intelligence out there somewhere that's non-physical, towards human extinction. They want us dead. They want us dead because if we are very, humans are very politically disruptive to what I think the structure of the universe is. Imagine this whole structure has been built to keep beings here, and these little weirdos on this out of the way planet create a body that can get people out and back to eternal creation in like a single lifetime, which is nothing. Like in the span of like billions and billions of years, 30 or 40 years is nothing. It is very politically disruptive. And that's why I think there's been so much stuff done to us, but we do still have a way out. Full transfiguration remains a possibility, but we all can bardo when we die. So bardo, the physiological process, is your spirit, you, which is separate from those energy bodies we discussed, taking out all of the energy you invested into your physical body so that nothing gets left behind and you are not diminished if you do need to reincarnate, if you do need to go elsewhere. If you don't do this, yes, there's an energy charge that gets lost. So it's kind of like using a battery with your cell phone. Like every time you make a call, every time you incarnate, lose some charge, and eventually you're like, oh, I can't make a call anymore. We can reclaim this energy that we invested into a body and also past bodies through this process. The process gets more and more intricate the more advanced you are. So I just like charts, so I gave this numbers, and so I gave this a chart and a number. So bardo one, if you're in layer 1 to 6, so if you use Scholten's system, which is the most common kind of hydrogen series to gold series, you just reclaim the energy you store in the physical body. Bardo 2, which kind of corresponds to that layer 7, which is birds and butterflies and maybe the lily allies a little bit and lanthanides. You reclaim the energy that's been siphoned off by that net, by that eight sphere. You burn off cords and karma and the attachments that keep you trapped in samsara. In Barter 3, which kind of corresponds to that eighth stage of development, remember, fungi, actinides, you kind of reclaim all the portions of yourself that you've lost, if you've ever lost any energy in a past life by not fully bartering there, and you reclaim all, and you start to be able to transfigure, you know, your astrological imprint and the energies that you inherit from your parents. And then Barter 4, which is where I think everyone can get, is you start doing this before you die, you start integrating this into your life. And so you start clearing your miasms and everything else potentially before you die.
I just had a client yesterday who's 28 weeks pregnant. And I was like, you know, giving her some miasmatic remedies to kind of clear some of that stuff. And I gave her some bowel nodes. So it's obviously to sort out her bowel flora, because when the baby comes through the canal, that it gets the best possible, you know, start. And I really like that idea of kind of clearing some miasms and stuff before the baby is born, you know, so. Yeah. Clearing as much as we can, so that baby is not actually starting off with so much of that stuff. And this is kind of almost what you're saying, but in a different way, clearing some of this stuff before you go on to the next slide.
Exactly. Again, if we do this and we kind of reach this ultimate process, you know, I studied with Michal Yakir a lot, and she calls it tikkun olam. This is the Kabbalic term, the rectification. So that is the goal of Kabbalah, is to, they think that creation is kind of not going so well, so they rectify it through, in Kabbalah, you do it through righteous acts and through meditation and everything else. Here, we're doing it through our own biologies. So it's cool. The ultimate. And if you get it done in body, I think it takes a lot faster. Once you get this started, I think it happens even after you stop, even if you need to die halfway through the process, it just takes a lot longer. So, back away from my mystical speculations, and I am much more detailed with my mystical speculations. They're all very thoroughly documented in my book, if anyone's curious. But what do we use this remedy for? You, as any remedy, you can use it as a constitutional if they are needing it. You can use it, and this is absolutely, I think, the key indication for this remedy in almost all cases where someone is dying. It is an excellent palliative care. It will decrease pain, it will increase comfort, but it will also probably speed the dying process up. So you do need to get full informed consent with the person. It's like, you know what, this is going to make, you know, your body's going through the physiological process of death. We can give you this remedy. It'll help it go faster, easier, but it'll go faster and easier and more painful and more. Graciously, yeah. It will go that way. It's not the same thing as giving someone something like a medication that will induce death. We do that in Canada now. And I'm actually supportive of that. My dad died of stomach cancer in 2009, and that really sucked. And MAID would have been a really good thing for him. We call it MAID in Canada, medical assistance in dying. So this is not MAID. This is, you are assisting the vital force doing something. And if the person is engaged in a barter process physiologically, it will go more smoothly and quickly and wonderfully. So this is not the same thing as MAID. Although, again, in support of MAID, if the person is capable of consent, if they have a terminal disease and they have, you know, enough people sign off on it for them, the original MAID, not the MAID in Canada right now that has been pushed through by the courts, which has removed all of those provisions and is being abused. I do not like that. Yes, no, I feel bad. People blame it on Trudeau, and Trudeau has done a lot of things wrong, but that was not his fault. It was the courts that, like, oh, this person deserves MAID, but they don't meet one of these things. Strike it down. And they struck down every last provision of it. And it's just really, I'm just really unhappy with the courts right now. Mm-hmm. Anyway, regardless. So if you have someone in Canada and they're going through MAID, give them a dose of this right beforehand. If you're taking a pet through euthanasia, give them a dose for this beforehand. I actually did this I had to put down 4 dogs last year. So I gave this to all of them.
Four of your dogs?
Yes.
No.
Yeah, it was really, 2023 really sucked for me.
Yeah,
it was
a few things happened.
Yeah, no, it was a rough year.
Do you think it was the chair that kind of sped these things along for you, like triturating it?
No, because Witchia happened after, like, I was kind
of... Yeah, because that was November, I think you said. Hey, November 2023.
And then I took it very early in October, so I don't think it was Witchia. That was just me having
well,
a
you know
terrible.
How sometimes these things, like energetic things that happen before you do the remedy, like it's kind of preparing you for the remedy, for the
And
trituration
everything
that
has
you're going
been
to do.
so, if that was the case, well, then fare thee well to my old life. But anyway, yeah, no, I did it with four dogs. And it's very funny because my dogs always hated taking medicine from me, but I'd give them Welwitschia and I'd give them kind of the protocol from my first book, A New Era. And I'd give it to them like a little bowl and they'd just be like, nom, 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 before they died. And you could see it, like you could see their higher auras kind of popping out of their body. You can see the discarnate, the parts of their aura that never really fully are incarnated. They're like, well, there's no point now. Pop, 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 pop. It does feel like that. It's kind of like a pop, 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 pop. And then there's just the etheric body, and the etheric body kind of dissolves. And then the little essence of yourself, your seed atom, which is stored right about here and is very closely connected to the thymus gland, and which we can access with thymus gland as a homeopathic.
Oh, so it's not the same thing as thymus gland, because when you pointed there, I presumed you were talking about the thymus gland. So this is actually different.
It's a different organ, but it's very close. Like it's the thymus gland is the physical manifestation of it.
Okay. And what did you call it? The seed gland?
The seed atom.
Seed atom. Okay.
Yeah. So it's right around here, kind of upper chest area, and the thymus gland is very connected to it. And
Like
you can
on the
actually
sternum area?
Yeah, it's kind of a little bit below the sternum.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So we can also use this remedy to reclaim energy from our past lives, particularly if you've got a really traumatic one. The funnest part is, not only does this speed up bardo if it's inevitable, it will stop premature bardo. So if someone is going through like a really serious disease or death process or something like that, and they should not be going through this, you can give them this remedy. It will not harm them. If they're going through a bardo process, it may help them quite a bit. So I don't know how to diagnose this, but you know, if someone's going through like if they're dying and they should not be dying, this may be something to consider with them. It will slow the astrological, or it will slow the aging process a little bit. It will clear astrological and birth tethers and sort of like a lot of that ancestral crap that we get from our parents. And it will clear miasms and blocks. Like a lot of the time, if there's a patient and just so much has happened to them, I'll start them with Welwitschia. And that will often start the process of clearing the miasms, clearing all the stuff that they've been exposed to. And often I will find that I'll give them Welwitschia, and their constitutional remedy just pops up.
I'm glad you said that, because I was kind of getting a little bit scared using this remedy, because I think I don't want to give it to somebody and then accidentally kill them. But
no,
so
it does not do that. It does not do that. It may aggravate them a little bit. Like I'm doing a course of it right now and it's aggravated me. But I've also discovered a pretty good indication for it. Well, which is really good with chronic infections, particularly the stubborn ones. Like I've got a number of patients with mold toxicity. And mold toxicity, particularly when the patients are colonized by the mold, is really quite a challenge to
It's
treat.
really hard. And you know what? I've just recently realized so many of these people with chronic sinus infections, it's actually mold, like the mycotoxins go and sit in the sinus cavities. And, you know, I often give them like the mold support remedy, and suddenly all this stuff comes out and they can breathe for the first time in years. And it was through an experience with my husband that, you know, we discovered this mold thing. But VCSTest.com. Have you been to that website?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, visual contrast sensitivity. So just for our listeners, anyone can go there, VCSTest.com. It's an online diagnostic test, and you just answer a bunch of questions and it will tell you if you've got mold toxicity or not. Have you found that personally helpful, that site? I've seen quite a few clients there.
I do different testing. I do it in North American testing. So quite often I will go by history, and then I will just see there are some urine mycotoxin testing that I also do as well. There's questionnaires that I use as well. But then if the questionnaire is indicated, and if we're not getting anywhere, we're somewhere else, I will often do the urine mycotoxin testing. And so
it's quite
so
expensive,
I learned,
that one. We can do that here as well.
Yeah, it's like about $500 Canadian. It's a chunk, but some people want to do it. This is actually quite good for that, particularly when people aren't responding to the botanical and homeopathic therapies. We've all got those stubborn mold patients that you can get them a lot better, but they're not quite there yet. This is a good remedy to try.
Okay.
Also for things like chronic Lyme and chronic like Epstein-Barr virus and other things like that, very, very helpful. And I actually, well, I find other remedies are good for COVID, but COVID might also be an indication for this. But yeah, no, it's a very useful remedy for these kind of nitpicky chronic infections, these premature bardos, and a really good remedy to give like particularly when someone is dying or if someone is about to do the old term before we came up with politically correct made term in Canada was euthanasia. If they're about to do a euthanasia, which, you know, in Canada, it's 5% of people choosing to die now. And I don't have a problem with that. I think, you know, like one of my, this woman I've known for almost all of my life, she had breast cancer. She was going to have a rough couple of months. She chose MAID. Good on her. There's not a problem with that. So that's my little political statement. We're having quite the little debate about MAID in Canada.
Yeah, I'm very careful with giving my opinion on any of these things because I always say I never know what I would choose if I'm in that situation myself. So yeah.
I know what I would choose because I was in this situation. I was specifically remember wishing for someone to do this for dad. Dad wanted it. We couldn't do it. We suffered through weeks. So I'm giving my opinion on that.
Yeah, I just wonder though, like, isn't there something that we can learn out of that as well? Like, if you think about I'm worried that it's a opportunity missed for like an incarnation opportunity. Like there's something amazing that you're going to learn out of that. Because I just think of the toughest times in my life when I thought there was no way out. And then when I get to look back on that, I'm like, wow, those were really the times that defined me. And I almost feel that that incarnation opportunity is being taken away if you go through the MAID. Now, once again, I am very careful what I say because I haven't been put in that situation. So these are the things that I wonder about without judgment. I just wonder. I wonder, is there, and this is with pets as well. Like people, I kind of feel like pets have the opportunity, they should be not the privilege, just like a right to pass naturally. And so when that's drug assisted, I wonder that an incarnation opportunity has been lost. This is just the type of stuff, and I'm in the shower going for a walk. This is the type of stuff that goes through my head. I'm just wondering. Yeah, judgment.
Those are fair questions. Me being me, I'm like, all right, if you haven't gotten in up until the last 3 weeks of your life, not happening. Let's try again. For our dogs, one of them had really advanced cancer. She lost bowel control. She lost bladder control. She was clearly in a great deal of pain. She had her abdomen was swelling up from the tumor. Like, you have lived a good life, my little girl. Now it's time to go. And I have other religious beliefs that I kind of guided her to a higher version of Earth where she is, where all of them are actually incarnating as humans right now. So they've all earned a precious human rebirth, as they say in Buddhism, on a much nicer planet than this one. So they're good that way. So I'm like, that's kind of where I approach that from, is like the number of humans that actually kind of do this naturally that have completed everything on a lifetime on Earth is very small. So most people do end up needing kind of an assistance that way. And I usually give it to them.
Okay.
So just because I know how to do that. I'm trained in that. So on a larger level, when we use this remedy, I think we can start getting ourselves back into that natural physiological transfigurative pathway, and we can chip away at these various structures that bind us. And I jokingly say we can resurrect the species. I do think that's possible. One of the most insidious of illusions in the modern world is that this is all that we are capable of. This is all that we can do. This is the best that it possibly could be. How dare you question it? No, we can do much better. We can do much better miasmatically. We can do much better culturally and socially. I think this is one of the methods we can do to do this. It's just a lot of the things that are binding us into this current state that nobody's really satisfied with are on an energetic level. And we're not dealing with that. We're making it worse with our medical practices that are dominant in much of the English-speaking world. So we can begin to chip away at it. I actually would strongly, I'm starting to use this. You know, I explain to patients what I'm doing. I do not just give them this remedy. I get full informed consent because informed consent is important throughout all branches of medicine. But I will have a talk with them about this, and I will give patients a dose of this earlier in life. Give an infant a dose of this remedy. They are on that start and burning up their miasms and maybe transfiguring if that is their purpose throughout the rest of their life. It is enhanced by other vitalist medicines like constitutional homeopathic prescribing. As I said, this will often clarify the constitution if you can't see it. Sometimes I can't see it. Maybe I'm just a terrible homeopath. I don't know. But there are times when I can't see it.
Yeah,
and this clarifies it a lot. It's also enhanced by like manipulation, by nutrition, by other vitalist medicines. Like you start people on this program if you give them a dose of this remedy and it starts their vital force doing this, every other bit of vitalist medicine will help them along there and make it go faster. I actually really wanted to do an experiment where you'd like give it to a bunch of Buddhist or Buddhist, not Buddhist specifically, because this meditation, the Dzogchen meditation, is not specific to Buddhism and it probably didn't originate within it. It originated in the indigenous Tibetan religion Bon, and then some schools of Buddhism, you know, adopted it because it was awesome. I would love to get a bunch of Dzogchen practitioners and give like half this remedy and then like half placebo and see how many attained rainbow body in each one. Like that would be really fun for me. Maybe I'll try that one day. But you've had Tilch on and he's encouraging everyone to do a clearing with Streptococcinum, his C5 preparation of it to kind of clear it from the planetary miasm. So I actually am going to ask people to know what they're doing, who are trained homeopaths and know how to manage reactions, to start doing this as well. I got just a number popped into my head that if 100 people do this, we could really, really shift the planet. So I would suggest, if someone is so inclined, which is why I'm doing this promotion and suggesting to people to do this and, you know, publicizing this remedy as much as I can, I would suggest that we all do this as well. Just do, you know, a course, as they call it, in kind of the CEASE therapies, where you take a dose twice a week. And the way Kim Kalina taught me, you do a dose twice a week of a given potency until you stop reacting to it for 2 weeks, and then you move up. Mm. So I would, if anyone feels inclined, if we get 100 people doing this, we can really shift some of the bullshit that we're dealing with right now.
That sounds cool.
Yes. So if you are a lay person or you are not, and you do not know how to use homeopathy, please do not do this. Please, please do not do this. If you're a homeopath, you know, you should be able to do this. If you know how to do homeopathy, if you're experienced, this shouldn't be a problem. Just, you know, people tend to aggravate if you move up too quickly. I was used to moving up every couple of weeks and I did this on myself. So I'm like, all right, 2 weeks at 60. I'm fine and everything. And then, you know, I moved up to 30 and I'm like, oh my God, this is too much. So I went back down to 6 and then I did 12 and I'm doing 12. So you move up a little more slowly.
I have a question for you about that. So yeah. Would you actually go back down, or would you then just say water dose that potency until you can tolerate it and then go up from there? I think I'm just that person. I never like to go back. Like, I always just want to go forward. That's just my mentality. So,
oh no, I go down with this. With this
you
one,
you do go down. Okay, but is there something you could do, like just water dose at 30°C until you could tolerate it, and then just keep going up?
You are not going backwards with if you're going down. Okay. You're just like giving the body what it can tolerate at the given time. You're moving forward. I always like to tell my patients, we don't get points for kicking your ass. Like we really don't. The goal is to do this gently and freely and happily and calmly and with a minimum of distress. So yeah, I'm hoping to get an American pharmacy. And if there's an Australian pharmacy that listens to you and they want to contact me, I will send them the powder. Right now, this is only available from Helios. I paid them to have them run it up for me and everything like that. So it is, if you go to Helios, there's two preparations of Wolwichia and one says C36 and that's mine. So just if you want to use this remedy and you want to do this, the old Wolwichia is a good remedy, but it won't do all this. You need the C36 trituration, which is mine. And they have all the potencies in there and everything.
So I have a question for you about this too, Paul. And yes. Maybe did you want to finish something off before I ask you this question?
Nope, okay. That's pretty much
so. Dunitz and I've chatted a few times, and it's something that I just really would like to see us doing is paying royalties to the people who created these remedies. Like, you know, the stuff that you go through when you triturate this. And you can't take patients in that time. That's 36 hours of it. Well, not just 36 hours, because there's all the preparing around that. There's, you know, it takes you out of your body often. And then all the writing up. So it just doesn't feel right that this then gets given to a pharmacy and they get all the money. So what Danitza started doing, I stock her Golden Spiral Masticum and the Petrified Sequoia Remedy. And whenever somebody buys it through my website, I pay her a 10% royalty of everything that I sell. So at the moment we're doing it monthly, but we'll probably just do it quarterly after this. But even if it was to be annual, and I'm just starting this conversation, we'll see where it lands. But I really challenge the pharmacies to start considering adding a 10% royalty into these types of remedies. And you know, it might mean that they charge $2 extra for a remedy, whatever. But that at the end of the year, even so that it's not such a big administrative task, you pull a report of how many of that remedy is sold and you send a 10% royalty check to the person who created that remedy. It's something I feel really strongly about.
I would really enjoy that. You know, I make a lot of remedies and everything. And the problem that I have had is getting people who getting pharmacies to who will actually willing to like sell them and everything. Cause like I'll find some rare bird species and no one wants to make it into a remedy or anything. Or I'll like, here's the trituration, just make it available and nobody wants to do it. So it's a challenge. If people want to do this, I would gladly accept 10% royalties on the remedies.
I am your gal in Australia. I will gladly do it for you. And it is so easy to do because we just pull a report through our online portal and sent the inside check. And you know, the email that I received from her, it was just so beautiful. And there was just this, I can't tell you the feeling of warmth and that sharing in abundance. And it's just like, it's the best feeling. It's so good. And I want more homeopaths and more pharmacies to do that. And Roots and Wings in Ireland do that as well. And the other thing is, we pay hardly anything for our homeopathic remedies. I really think that we should consider upping our prices. Because you buy a medicating potency for $10, $20, whatever, but you can sell unlimited amounts of that. So really, I do think our medicating potencies should cost more. And even if it's $20 or $30, whatever dollars, and I understand some homeopaths are busier than others, so it'd be easier to, harder to make their money back than some, but just add a couple of bucks at the pharmacies from their end, add a couple of extra dollars to that, and then work that in as a royalty for the person who created it, like Andreas Tilch. You know, he created, I mean, to be fair, Helios was the one that triturated that. And so they did the work in making it, but it was his brainchild. So I do think that there needs to be some financial acknowledgement of all of that. And just so everybody is 100% clear, I love the homeopathic pharmacies. I do have a radionics machine. So technically, I don't ever have to buy a remedy in my life. I can make it all on the machine, but I don't. I go and support our pharmacies and I go and buy directly from them. And when I run out of remedies, even though I can, you know, top it up and reuse it, I buy more from them because I feel that energetic exchange is important. And I want them to be successful. And I want them to continue to work and support us. So I just think it just needs to flow and, you know, in all directions.
Yes. And I would add homeopathic pharmacies, if you are listening, please start making my new remedies. Like, please, like, I love you guys. You are never going to make a living selling sulfur 30C for the rest of your guys' lives. Like, there is going to need to be some innovation and there's going to be these new remedies that are offered. It's like me and Michal have struggled quite a bit to find pharmacies that are willing to carry the remedies that she makes as well. So it's actually really quite challenging. So those two struggles, like I would actually, I would be very happy if I made some money off of my remedies, even if I made like 50 cents off a potency they sell or something, like that'd be great. But I would also like just to be like, have it easily available. Like if I publish a remedy and like, I can go get Paul's trituration of, you know, Wilwitchia or, you know, Upepa epops or Pharomacris mosino or whatever weird birds that he's working on right now, which is kind of my next thing. So yes, no, so that's it. But that's the end of Wilwitchia. I'm in agreement with your sentiments, Eugenie, and I would add that other, I would add those other things too. And maybe the pharmacies do need to kind of raise their prices just a scooch, just to subsidize the making of other remedies and so forth. But if that's what we need to do to stay that way, then that's what we need to do.
You and I need to talk after this recording.
Yes, we will talk. But I will add my one little thing. So if I know a couple of you have been waiting for my birds book, I am almost done.
Okay, that was my next question too.
It is going to be this year. I was hoping for May, but the Wilwitchia kind of took me out of this. Like it was a 100-page book. Let's see. Do I have it? I have it here. So if you get the book, I used to have a person to make covers for me. And so I tried this on my own and it didn't turn out well because it was all pixelated and they cut me off, my name off and everything. So that your cover will look different. But the book, I wrote this in a month. This just flew out of me in 100 pages. And it was, I was really proud of it. So that book flew out of me in a month, but it took me a month out of my bird book. And I just actually like 20 minutes before you left, finished a chapter on the coracoforms. So kind of the toucans, and we don't have any toucans, but the family and the woodpeckers and the quetzals and some of the hoopoes and things like that. So I just finished a chapter on that, which is a really interesting chapter. And then I just have falcons, parrots, and passerines, and then I'm done. So
wow, I'm in two minds about whether I should say this or not, because some of the people that's going to be part of this are listening and I don't want them to know what we're triturating, but we are going to do a trituration of emu now. Everyone is going to do it with us, just close your ears. Too late now. But apparently it's only the emu and I think the cassowary are the only two birds on the planet that have two spines on the feather. And I'm just so fascinated by that. I don't know. There's something about that that just completely blows my mind. So I'm really excited for us to triturate that and see what comes out of it.
If possible, Eugenie, I would encourage you to do the cassowary. It has not been done. Emu has been done.
I did not know
cassowary
that.
Has not been done. Cassowary has not been done. So if emu is your baby, go for it. But if you want to expand the Immateria Medica, I would really do that. And oh my God, if you could send it to me, if you send me like a little summary before I publish, I'd really appreciate that. That would be super cool.
Absolutely. It's booked in for May. The trituration is booked for May, and this episode will definitely go out before then. But
I'm 100% not done by May.
Shall I send you some cassowary feather as well? And
that would be nice. Yes, I would do that. But yeah, no, it is. If you guys could send me some cassowary, that would be great. I did write a chapter on kind of the birds, and I haven't published any. Well, I haven't published it yet, but like I did two. So I did a fragment of a rock shell of a shell from one of the elephant birds or one of the elephant birds in that they had in Morocco. Not Morocco.
Never heard Madagascar. Of those.
They used to have these big elephant birds from Madagascar, and I did a rhea feather from South America. So
elephant bird. I'm just Googling it now. It looks so cool.
Yeah, they've got a remedy made out of an eggshell that I just retriturated, and it was super cool.
What?
And then I did a rhea feather as well, which was really awesome.
A rhea, how do you spell that?
R-H-E-A. It's from South America. And
almost looks like a emu type thing.
Oh yeah, they're very closely related. It was very interesting because rhea feather is actually really good for amalgam toxicity. This kind of came up, and I've used it a couple times since then. It's really good for this. It's why I love proving things, is you just come up with like weird indications sometimes that you never would have figured out otherwise. Like systematics can give you a really good guess, but when you do the actual proving, whether it's trituration or Hanumanian, you do get these fun little things happening. You're like, I never would have imagined. So
that is so cool. I have a question for you. Where did you source the Welwitschia seed from? Well, how did you get hold of it?
Michal gave it to me. Michal has magic powers.
Okay.
It's funny too. There's a couple people I know who just found something. So Michal just has magic powers to get what she wants in terms of plants. So she sends me stuff and we work on it together. We've been working on her latest book on the more primitive plants for about 4-ish years now. So we did like most of the ferns together, and we did a lot of mosses and a lot of things. And I've done a couple of pine trees together as well. So so that book is coming out and it's going to be lovely.
Quick question. How much time have you got?
I am good.
Are you good? When you said about, as you were talking about the Bardo and the spirits and the incarnating and like one lifetime and all that stuff, like literally today, I only understood about 10% of everything that you've said. So I'm really looking forward to listening back on this episode and let it sinking in. I've just recently seen some comments or thoughts going around that the COVID vaccine is causing people's souls to kind of be stuck on the planet and that they can't actually incarnate. Or have you ever heard that?
Yes, I've heard that theory too, disregarding the fact that people's souls were stuck here to begin with anyway.
Okay.
Like, what do you think, Sam? Like, I would ask these people. Now, I have seen this as well. So we do need to have perhaps a frank discussion. You know, Eugenie, you are a wonderful diplomatic person. I don't give too many fucks. So I will be very frank about this. A lot of the alternative health and, shall we say, alternative discourses have an outsized influence on people who have a very evangelical Christian background. There's nothing wrong with this. That is a valid spiritual path. However, there are some unpleasant aspects of that of that path that kind of pop up sometimes, like ethnic nationalism. There's an association, not universal, but it's in there. And there are things like that that happen. There is this imagining in this thing that everyone that disagrees with them is a Satanist. I'm gay. I'm sure that's a shock to you, Eugenie. How many times do I get accused online of being, you know, a pedophile or a groomer or something else? I believe because I post photos of my nephew and I interact with my nephew and my niece and everything.
Really? So sad to hear that. Really worries me about them. It says more about the person that says it about you than about you. Because what type of person would say that?
Well, and this is kind of the thing. I get accused of these things a lot. I get accused of being such things because I think that trans people are a normal expression of human gender. There have been trans people documented linguistically and culturally since human history began. If you don't force them to do anything, this is a natural human phenomenon like homosexuality. I know you're going to get comments about this from this, and I apologize in advance from them. They're going to be nasty, but there are certain aspects of that alternative culture that have been very heavily influenced by that evangelical Christian thing, and it is going in a very unpleasant direction that way. It is for cultural reasons. They see their ideas about things as being, you know, God-given, and if you're deviating from that, then it's diseased. And then there is an opinion that everyone that disagrees with them is somehow Satanist or anything else like that. And it's even become to the point where they're like mythologizing things like the COVID vaccine, thinking that it keeps them from going to heaven or hell, keeps everyone locked into earth and everything. And to be frank, we were locked into earth beforehand. There's been a term for this in Eastern religion, in the Dharmic religions, for thousands of years. It's called samsara. We were stuck here to begin with. The COVID vaccine didn't help with that. Or it didn't, you know, do anything.
Oh, yeah.
I will suggest that I think the human vital force is a lot sturdier than that, than to be harmed so much by such an intervention.
I freaking love your answer. That was so cool. I was just quickly, somebody sent me a message. I wonder if I can find it. Oh, here. There is a lady on Instagram. She's got quite a big following, and she has just been talking about how homeopathy is all Freemasonry. And apparently Hahnemann was a Freemason. But
tell her that, so was George Washington.
Say again? So was George Washington.
So that usually shuts people up. Like, yeah, your sacred constitution writers were all Freemasons too.
It's so odd, her Facebook, like saying some of the trials, so, like the homeopathic trials that inventors did was extremely focused on sexual arousal. It can contain insects, snake venom, cockroaches, flies, and dog milk. All the same ingredients are commonly used in occult voodoo potions by witchcraft practitioners.
Sexual
and she's got
arousal.
200. I know. And she's got 203. It's very odd. I don't know. People have
I will say that sexual arousal is something that we as medical practitioners need to keep in mind.
And then a photo here of her worshiping Jesus.
If I do have a small practice focus, I talk to straight women about sex and birth control a lot.
Yeah.
Like a lot. And a lot of that is focus on arousal, on birth control methods, on things of that nature. If you are a medical practitioner and you are not talking to your patients about orgasms and sex and birth control, you are not doing a good job, unless you're a pediatrician or something like that. And even then, the older, like when they're getting up to teenagers years, like you need to have that talk with them and everything. And it needs to be frank, and it needs to be, you know, fact-based and everything. So yes, there is, again, it's kind of that same evangelical thing. And I don't want to sound anti-evangelical. It is a valid and a good and a wonderful spiritual path. And if that is your path, then power to you. I'm happy about that. It is going through a moment right now with this kind of stamping down and frankly, often making shit up about people that see things differently and ascribing these evil, satanic and, you know, things to people that are not, that do not apply. And it is permeating the alternative world quite a bit lately, because since COVID, and there's been a big inrush of people from that culture into our world. I very much support them in their spiritual path, but there are things that I strongly disagree, and I'm not going to be quiet about that. I think they're going to lose this culture war. I mean, I remember, because I am almost 40 now, I remember when same-sex marriage was the thing and the entire world seemed to be against the gays and we won. And I don't even know how we did it, but like, you know, piss off a gay man to your peril. We are vindictive and we are very well organized and we will get things done. So this culture war is not going to go away the way that particularly against trans people, because they've managed to drag the gays into it, but it is not going to go the way they think. And so there is going to be, but yeah, I know that is something that we need to be a little bit vigilant about. And one of the fallacies that also goes along with it is that Christians don't have an energy body, that all energy medicine is, you know, satanic or evil, and it is against Jesus and everything. And I've had some talks with some people about this, like, well, Paul, you know, does grafting a remedy or taking a homeopathic go against the power of Jesus? And like, all right, my general advice for people is like, Jesus, God, Allah, the Sambhatadra, how, you know, Vishnu, however you see divinity, wants you to be healthy. Like, they just inherently want you to be healthy. If you're feeling that a particular practice is against your religion, don't do it for you. I will often tell people, all right, you're feeling a little uncomfortable with this, particularly in that subculture, just add in Jesus's name. If this is not what you want, just neutralize it or something. Nobody's neutralized a homeopathic remedy by doing that before. So that would be it. the idea that Christians don't have an energy body or anything else like that is just silly. Like, you do. I can see it. Like, I can sense it. I can see it. You've got it just as much as you do. Christians do energy work, even if they don't like to recognize it. There's a lot of that going on, even if it's kind of subconscious. It's just a weird cultural thing that we do need to have a frank discussion about. I don't shy away from discussions like that, just because I have not seen shying away from discussions like that lead to anything particularly beneficial. But I was trained in anthropology, so I do have that honest belief that most religious paths are leading us kind of the same way.
Oh, interesting. It's just
sometimes we kind of get lost into a little tangle. They get lost into a little tangle of thickets and everything like that. Like European Christianity did for thousands and thousands of years. It got lost into debates on how many angels can dance on the head of a pin, and you know, can women be priests? And they're still lost in like, can women be priests? And you know, can we give divorced people communion and everything? Like, still lost in debates like that.
Yeah.
Every spiritual path leads to that state, I think. If it's went to its fullest extent, it would lead back to that transfigurative, saintly, sagely state, because that's a physiological state. It's just the religions kind of get lost in things over things, and they'll eventually find their way out in a historical realm. It's just not, haven't done that yet.
I have to add something there about trans people, and just I like to think of it as myself as the most unjudgmental person. Like, everybody can do whatever they want as long as they're not hurting anybody else, preferably not hurting themselves. But there is, and there's a very interesting discussion with Dr. Phil and Joe Rogan recently that's more related to the use of the drugs too, because the drugs that they use have got serious side effects. So if you are somebody that feels you're stuck in the wrong body or anything like that, that's one thing. But then forcing these hormones on young children, and then, I mean, Canada is actually really scary in that point where, you know, child can be taken away from the parents if they at 8 years old feel that they are a boy trapped in a girl's body. And they can be giving these gender reassigned drugs, and they don't even have to tell their parents. And the thing is just that you can't actually reverse a lot of this. So that's the only thing that I want to say about that. Like, everybody needs to be who they want to be their best selves. But the drug side of it scares the shit out of me, because I think it's going to cause so much damage, and you become a slave for life to the pharmaceutical industry, because you have to keep taking those drugs for life. So I hope that we can get to a place where we can use homeopathy to make people feel okay in their body, whatever that is, without the needs for these drugs that have serious harmful effects on these people that you cannot reverse.
So Eugenie, I've had some small training in trans medicine. One of the reasons why I think that trans issues are not pathological is because I've treated a number of people that we would call trans. The trans thing never went away. Their shame did about being trans. The trauma from often parental abuse went away. But the gender identity, if anything, got more clear after a good constitutional prescribing, and quite often remedies like Staphysagria.
And butterflies are amazing for that. I've used butterfly remedies for that successfully too, so that they can decide which way they want to go. And sometimes it's like, either way, we want them to be happy in their body, right? And that's where I think homeopathy is really powerful.
Now, the interesting thing to consider, did people in India or indigenous North America and the way that particularly the Athabascan languages, training in anthropology came in, the way that the names translate is that they would have male, the genders transform. Most of them had five genders, particularly the Navajo, and then there's one Cree language that I'm thinking of right now. It translated into male in male body, female in female body, true neutral, male in female body, female in male body. There's this idea that there is a fundamental essence to being male or female, something that is not purely physical, and that it doesn't quite always hook up with the junk you get. I understand this very well. You know, here I'll be public with my gender identity. I'm male in this lifetime, but I can remember quite a few past lives, and I've been female in almost all of them. So I'm kind of like, when I picture myself in my head, I'm a straight woman, but I'm just a gay boy in this body, which I'm perfectly fine with, because, you know, I can remember as many past lives. I'm like, all right, if I really feel like a woman, like, I'll get there one day. And you know, it's fun being a gay boy right now. So this is something I do understand quite well. Did such people have access to hormonal therapies back in the day in indigenous North America or in India or anything?
No.
What happened? Why do we need them now?
Because we have
them. Very good question. No, this is the question. Why? And I will tell you, hormonal therapies for a certain amount of trans people can be amazing. there is a small percentage of the trans population that you give them hormonal therapies that correspond to their gender identification, and they just mentally stabilize. Like, it is amazing. You've seen, Eugenie, people with, like, women or cis men or cis women, and their hormones are off, and they just go nuts. Like, you've seen this?
Mm.
I've seen this all the time, too. When your hormones are off, it seems that you don't really get... So why is there this pervasive hormonal... I do not think this is specific to trans people. This is a global hormonal disturbance that most people in Anglophone societies, Anglophone is English speaking, and probably a lot of other European derived societies have nowadays. Why are we all so hormonally messed up?
Well, the xenoestrogen, for sure.
They're not universally present. I'm not sure what it is, but there is some global hormonal thing that is going on that is really messing people up, and that trans people needing supplemental hormones is a small portion of that. So the puberty blockers are a relatively rare phenomenon, because the way kind of the protocol that you're supposed to work with trans, I've gotten some small training in this. If someone expresses a gender identity that is troubling them in any way, you start with some small stuff, like maybe you want to do your nails, or maybe you want to wear these kind of clothes, or do something else like that. Is this happy? Yay! If that doesn't work, then you go to the next level and the next level. Things like puberty blockers and surgeries are quite down the way. They are quite up the thing, and there are a lot of steps to get there. There are some clinics, particularly the English clinic, I forget the name of it right now, but they were skipping those steps, so they were going straight to that. That actually doesn't happen that often. It's like my friend Holly has a daughter, Carolyn, and in her class, 50% of the people they're like genderqueer or gender questioning or any and things like that. Historically, about 1% of the population is trans or gender questioning. So there's 50% now, but they're not taking hormones or puberty blockers or doing anything about it. They're just like, I am genderqueer, I'm doing this or doing that, which is great, wonderful, good for them. There's one thing that the kind of anti-trans reaction is happening right now. It is making being trans or being genderqueer super cool with young people. Like, they're all doing it. It is all the rage right now. And I'm like, oh my God, kids, see, everyone was trying to be gay when I was in high school, and now you all are genderqueer. Oh my God, this is great. I used to be a party boy and everything, so I'd love to see young people rebel by like partying more, but they don't do that. They're super lame. But they're all genderqueer now, and it's wonderful. And I think this is just... So it's just a thing that young people are doing right now. So I don't know what they're going to do next, but I'm like, oh my God, guys, do it. But they're just identifying that way and not taking any other measures, which is great. Those measures, I'm not going to say they never have a place, but they're actually relatively rare in the spectrum of gender medicine. Mm. So I am, that's my naturopathic perspective on that. Mm. Why I think that the trans people needing supplemental hormones is a function of their body not making hormones the way that almost everyone else's body is not making hormones right now. So
yeah, and there's so many reasons for that. I mean, the plastics in our environment is probably one of the number one reasons. Mm. So, you know, pesticides, herbicides, all these things in our drinking water. It's just messing up our hormones left, right, and center, which is just really such a worry. I'm really glad that we've had this conversation. And you are a really good person to have it with, because you have, you know, got experience with that. So
I am in this world and everything. I have no interest in transition or living anything else but my gay boy life this time. It's something I have some opinions on. And having lived through the last bout of culture wars on this topic, I do have some strong opinions on it, and I do not shy away from giving them.
Mm, I love that. And that's the thing that I wish more of us can do. Is just talk about these things without taking it personally, and let's nut it all out. And the person that you're speaking to might have an opinion that you never thought about, and it helps you see something from a different angle. And look, you really don't have to agree on everything, and that's totally fine, but accepting each other at that place, and it's not your job to try and convince them, but just hearing them out and not hating on people or trying to bring them down because they have a different idea to yours. It'd be so good if we didn't have a bit more of that in this world.
Well, I'm a little gay boy that is center left in the most right wing province in Canada and the most right wing city in Canada. I've had to get along with people that think differently than me, and I can do it. It's a skill growing up as, you know, the child of a social worker and a teachers union leader in Alberta, and also being kind of center left in a country that really values public medicine and working in private medicine myself, because, you know, I'm a naturopathic doctor, no government is going to pay me to do this. So I'm working in the private sector. So I've had to really get along with, figure out how to get along and square the circle with a number of different people.
Interesting. Paul, can you please tell us, our listeners, all the places they can purchase your books and everything else that you have to offer? And are you still taking on new clients and how you work and just all the things if somebody wants more of what you have?
So my books are all available on lulu.com. And you can go to, what is, how do the Australians say it? www.drpaulterio.com/publications. And there's a list of all the journal articles that I've written. I've written a number of free ones. I have some free triturations. I may put up a new bird one soon. I haven't put up a bird one yet. I should do that. But, and then there's a list of my books. My books are all on lulu.com. Please do not buy anything of mine on Amazon because I make no money off of that. I released one book once and Jeff Bezos pays me literally nothing. And there's dick all I can do about it because it's Jeff Bezos. So I tried to withdraw my book from it and apparently I can't. So do not Amazon if you see something of mine. Yeah, no, and I just do not feel like, so I just didn't publish anything else afterwards because I don't feel like paying for Jeff Bezos's divorce or whatever. So yeah, no, so please don't do that. But lulu.com, super good. And if anyone has any publishing needs, Lulu is amazing.
Okay.
I highly recommend them. So if you ever want to write a book, usually publishers
are easy. Several books in my head that just needs to get onto paper though. That's the problem.
Lulu is a fantastic thing and they do all the shipping and all that kind of thing for you. And then they'll bind it and like just send it out to people and they take some of the money, but they send you money. Yeah. So I'm there. And one of the consequences of being a licensed naturopathic doctor is that I am unfortunately limited to practicing in places that I am licensed in, which at the moment is Alberta. So if anyone is in Alberta and they want to come see me, I would love to see you. If I will send you a referral if I know someone locally to do that. But if anyone in North America wants to practice with or a vitalist naturopathic doctor, there are North American organizations for homeopathy, but I'd also encourage people to go to the Naturopathic Medicine Institute, in which I'm hopefully becoming a fellow soon, which has a network of naturopathic primary care doctors that is trained in vitalist medicine, in actually treating and assessing and dealing with the vital force of humans, which, oh my God, you must have some of those people online because that is the need, Eugenie. That is the need. People, homeopathy is wonderful, but people need primary care. They need like family doctors and things like that to be vitalists to do that. That is the need. And that is what my organization is dealing with right now. That is what we are teaching.
You say my name so nicely, Paul. When I moved to Australia, I had to, because, you know, the Aussies just butcher everyone's names and they shorten it to nothing.
Like,
yeah. Yes. So I actually, we had a neighbor called Grant. And I mean, that's one syllable, but the Aussies managed to call him Gra. I'm like, really? You've committed to the first three letters. Just say the next two, Grant, not Gra, Grant. So over here, even I used to hate it when people call me Eugenie. But I've just embraced it now. I'm like, oh, I can't be bothered. I'm just Eugenie now. So when somebody calls me Eugenie or Eugenie or something, I'm like, oh, it sounds so nice.
Oh, you got, it's a very beautiful French name. You must say it. You must say it properly.
So when
you're paired with my name as well, I've had every variation of my Francophone last name, which is hilarious because I don't actually speak French like at all. Like I'm really not good at it, but I've got this French last name, and I hear every butcher of it.
It is so beautiful. Yes. Yeah, Terrio, you said, hey?
Yes.
Well, we've chatted a couple of times now, so I know the pronunciation. Paul, it's lovely to chat with you. Thank you so much for your time. And I'm excited to hear our listeners' feedback. Come and join us in our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/HelloHomies. And Paul is in there. And it's lovely because people can ask questions and get clarifications on things. So
I am open, and thank you guys for listening to my data dump, and it's much better organized in the book. I actually, you may not believe me, but I left a lot out. Like I really focused on concision and the important points, because this is a big remedy.
Amazing. See you soon.
All right.